Welcome to the Next in Time podcast, where we explore the fascinating depths of how people have the potential of impacting the world with the mission and vision of their project. Join us on this audio journey as we uncover the hidden gems of one's vision, delve into thought-provoking discussions of why they're pursuing it, and see how they're going to make an impact. If you're a curious person, this podcast is your go-to destination.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Next in Time podcast. I'm your host, ST, and today our guest is Aaron Bigman. He is the founder and CEO of Bigman Agriculture, which is looking to develop ways on raising staple crops in order to make vertical farming more profitable. So Aaron, welcome to the show.
Hi ST, how are you?
Good, how are you? How's everything going?
I'm pretty good myself.
Yeah, just wanted to know, what you're trying to do with your company is that you're making a significant focus on vertical farming, right?
Correct.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so essentially what we're doing in the vertical farming space is we're trying to make it profitable. We're trying to push the boundaries of what vertical farming is. So currently, vertical farmers primarily grow leafy greens, herbs, sometimes strawberries, and other crops like marijuana. Which is a very limited scope for what vertical farming is. And just for the viewers at home who don't know what vertical farming is, it's essentially the concept of growing crops indoors using hydroponics or aeroponics primarily anyways. But regardless, what we're trying to do is try to expand the boundaries of what crops can be grown. So we're trying to make it profitable to grow staple crops, at least primarily soybeans, in vertical farms, which is currently something that has not been explored really or done before.
In a way that staple crops include soybeans, rice, wheat, and all that.
Staple crops are, it's a broad term to describe foods that, you know, feed large populations. Primarily you go with your grains like rice, corn, wheat, rye, barley, etc., and so on and so forth, with your starches, yams, sweet potatoes, normal potatoes, and other crops as well, could potentially be included. But those are primarily the focus. And then over time, soybeans have come to be included in that general list.
And why are you looking to test this on soybeans out of all?
Sure. So, you know, when we started the company, we did a lot of research into different staple crops. We looked into wheat, and that was one option that we thought could be viable. And the reason why we chose soybeans to start with is because soybeans are a very large market, number one, and they're very liquid too. So it's not particularly difficult to be able to sell your soybeans. And it's easier in some ways to do it with soybeans as compared to other staple crops. Also, with the growing system that we have been working on, the anatomy of the soybean plant is very ideal because the plant forms a hook-like shape with its tap root or its main radicle that comes down off the seed head. And that can be a very advantageous trait in our system, which looks to reduce the cost of individual system itself so as to make the whole farm more profitable. And if you have a hook-like shape that the soybean produces, you can actually completely eliminate the need for growing ports in your system, which is a cost that can be shaved off. So that's one of the primary reasons why we decided to start with soybeans.
Okay, so before we go into more in depth about your company, let's get to know more about you, Aaron. Like, who you are, tell us who you are, where you come from, what made you, you know, go into the agribusiness.
Sure. Yeah. So my name is Aaron Bigman. So this is my first official entrepreneurial pursuit, you could say. So I grew up, was raised in Athol, Georgia. Currently live near Metro Atlanta, more specifically in Gwinnett. So I myself have always been interested in horticulture in general and agriculture. I started out my journey with just backyard farming, and eventually got more professional than that, to the point where I was doing it on a semi-professional scale. And eventually I got into the concept of, I've always been interested in technology as well. So I guess the two concepts sort of came together in early 2020 with the idea for vertical farming, and I was just enamored with it. And from there, I decided to merge sort of my two passions, which were horticulture and technology, and try to bring it into something so that way I would be able to create a company that was something that of my two top ones. So that's how I founded.
So in a way, when do you find that you had a passion for agriculture, and you're also trying to find a way to make agriculture more sustainable, and you're looking to find ways where agriculture doesn't have to, well, you don't have to graze so much farmland and basically take out so much land out of it and convert it into farmland, right?
Right. Yeah. So I have a big passion for horticulture. I think the technicalities of growing plants is very interesting, very intriguing to me. I generally like to think I'm back with it. But regardless though, you're right. I do think that it's important to, you know, since there is a limited amount of farmland, which is in constant degradation due to soil erosion, over-fertilization, et cetera, and so on and so forth, and issues with climate change and others, as well as a growing population, there needs to be a systematic change in agriculture. And vertical farming is one way to do that by shoving farms in a closer location to cities and closer to the mouths, which are going to eat the crops eventually, and to put it on vertical layers and use hydroponics and other horticultural technologies to make, you know, farming in general more sustainable and efficient, really.
And so now, what was your interest? So what was that one thing that got you interested in, you know, doing horticultural work?
Well, again, you know, I would say it started out with really humble roots. I just started out as like a backyard gardener, but eventually it went far beyond that to the point of technical horticulture and so on and so forth. And I just always have had a passion for culture and the cultivation of plants. Essentially it started out with a backyard garden, but grew into much more than that, which eventually grew into Big Magro, and hopefully will.
All right. Now going back to Big Magro, how you put your name as agro or agriculture, or you just.
Big Magro, Big Agriculture. Yeah.
All right. Because sometimes I can get those names pretty mixed up, and I can forget names pretty easily. But in a way, so what you're doing is with your venture, you're trying to, you know, make this thing more sustainable, make this more, make this focus on having soybeans be cultivated inside. Like, what does that process usually take? As you mentioned earlier in the episode, that vertical farming is something different from regular farming. So if you had to explain the process of cultivating those soybeans, what would it be?
Cultivating the soybeans at a normal farm or
in a vertical farm?
Okay, sure. So obviously I can't disclose everything, but there's many different ways you can grow the crop. The primary concern is how to grow them economically, efficiently, and sustainably. So that's what our focus is. So our system is a two-part system. We start with sprouting the soybeans in a separate dependent system, so they're sprouted, and we can do that through, you know, partially submerging them in water and then having that water bubble over them. There's other different methods we're testing out as we speak for how to sprout them most efficiently. But regardless, once the soybeans are sprouted and they have a taproot that is, you know, sufficiently long, we can go ahead and manually put them into the growing system. It currently functions very similar to a living wall, if you've ever seen one of those, where it's essentially a wall with a bunch of notches in it. And you take the soybean plants and you're going to put them inside of the notches. And then you're going to, because of the spacing of the notches and because of the closeness to the other wall, you can essentially guarantee that the roots are going to intertwine and hold all of the plants together on the wall. So thus eliminating the need for the grow port and reducing costs even further. So that's currently how the system primarily operates. And then once it comes time to harvest, you're going to come down the edge, you're going to come down the side of the wall that has the leaves and has the stems and has soybeans on them, and you're going to shear it from that end, which will subsequently cause the other side or the roots to fall down. And then you're just going to compost and shake for the heavy soybeans, which are going to be in the mulch of what you shake. And then from there, there's a machine which can separate the shell of the soybean from the dried bean itself. And then we're going to, well, and then in our farm, then we're going to take the soybeans to go.
Right. And so what is the difference in how soybean comes out when it's vertically farmed versus, let's say, horizontally farmed? Is there any particular difference, or is it just the same? Like, it's the same product that comes out.
So we like to always think that our products are, you know, superior in many different ways, but essentially the products are identical in terms of they meet all of the same requirements that soybean grown in a normal traditional outdoor farm will have. Our soybeans will probably have more nutritional content. That's a possibility. And they will also be farmed much more sustainably. But they still meet all of the dried weight requirements and moisture requirements to sell the soybeans to any grain silo or on the, you know, exchange in Chicago, as any other soybean. So fundamentally, they're not much different other than.
And so what is it that, you know, one thing about vertical farming in general is that, okay, you have the ability to plant as much food as you can within, let's say, a closed space. Usually if you want plants to grow, you usually need some sort of like open air space, especially if you talk in scientific terms, it needs photosynthesis for the plant to extract sunlight within and then be able to grow, you know, be able to like convert all whatever's inside into some sort of a plant. And why is it that in vertical farming has a way of really showcase, be able to still produce crops even with a little less sunlight than regular crops that's grown outside?
Of course. Yeah. So when you're vertically farming, you can do it in a greenhouse, which means you're going to be using primarily sunlight, which means that you're going to have to grow the crops probably not horizontally and closer to the way that I'm growing it, which is vertically. Because don't forget, a vertical farm can be either a stack layered of racks, or it can be a horizontal ball of sorts that has plants growing on the sides of it. So if you're growing it in a greenhouse, then you're going to be using primarily sunlight. So that's one option that some vertical farmers have opted for. What we're opting for, and what the vast majority of vertical farmers opt for, is the primary usage of artificial lighting, which is going to be, in general, LEDs, which are specifically tuned away from green light, so closer to the blue and red light spectrums, which is in general what plants want. So therefore, we can more efficiently provide light to soybeans or to any crop that we're going to be growing. So essentially, we would substitute sunlight or artificial light that has been modified to provide the spectrums that plants want most.
And do you think this could be Bigman Agro, do you think this could be more, are you looking to find a way to make farming easier for the average Joe who lives in a city who's looking to plant some stuff inside their homes?
Well, the average Joe who's growing crops is in general not trying to do it on a vast economic scale. So, you know, perhaps the technologies which we're developing could be valuable for them. The primary usage of these technologies is for commercialized farming, is for the commercialized application of indoor farming with staple crops, because, you know, normal people are going to farm and garden. I mean, that's how I started out. But normal people, gardening or farming is not what's going to push the needle the direction of sustainability or in the direction of, you know, the, or in the general, in the direction of, you know, ethical, more ethical cultivation of crops. So it has to be done on an industrial scale. So that's primarily what we're concerned with. And, you know, we're always, you know, I started out gardening, so I always have a soft spot for people who are trying to do, you know, at home agriculture. So yeah, our technologies could, you know, definitely be utilized by them. But the primary concern, and at least the intended application of these technologies is towards commercial agriculture. But that doesn't mean that it can't be used.
And so regarding commercial agriculture, one thing is that, the agricultural lobby is pretty strong within the United States. The lobby always dictates that, okay, we want to have farming done one way and sometimes want to do farming indoors. But let's just say if you want to adjust our farming techniques for, let's say, more indoor farming, less outdoor farming, and say, let's say there are agricultural lobby members who say, no, we don't agree with indoor farming because it will not produce the greatest quality crop ever. Let's say, I'm not saying your company will not produce the greatest crop. I'm just giving you a hypothetical scenario. So what would be the way on how you can, mitigate that kind of a risk factor?
Sure. So, lobbyists are going to say what they would like, and they're going to push legislation. I doubt there's going to be regulation of indoor farming because that would be relatively unprecedented to regulate farming. For having not good quality product, I mean, that's just a marketing tactic. So as long as we have customers who are willing to purchase our product, if they believe, our claims for sustainability, or just don't even forget our claims about sustainability, just look at the facts of our moisture content and of the fact that we have physical product, and that can sort of dissuade those risks. But, like you're saying in regards to lobbying, I guess the primary concern is subsidization, because beyond soybeans and beyond just the crops that I'm focusing on right now, mass adoption of vertical farming is very difficult if there's not substantial if they're not substantially subsidizing the industry, because it's just extraordinarily expensive to operate a vertical farm, especially when you're doing it inside of an urban area like a city. So without subsidization, it might still technically be possible in order to have large-scale vertical farms that operate in a city and grow crops beyond just bare-bones staple crops like we're growing. But that's essentially undecided, and that's, all dependent on the horticultural research to develop those growing systems. So in regards to lobbyists, again, the primary concern is, will they subsidize vertical farming? And if they're able to convince leaders in Congress that vertical farming does not deserve subsidization like other forms of beyond or like other forms of agriculture, then it's an uphill battle that, either has to be done through counter lobbying efforts or has to be done through horticultural innovation to make these systems produce product regardless of subsidization or not. So that's essentially the only responses that, we view are appropriate to solve that problem.
And so right now you're currently operating a test farm some outside of the Atlanta area, like somewhere in Gwinnett County, right? So I know you can't disclose everything, but do you have a summary that you can give as to what you're trying to do with that test farm?
Yeah, so the test farm is primarily concerned with the development of the two primary drivers for soybeans, which is the sprouting system and the primary growing system. So that's what we're developing. So we're on version 4.0 since we've started trying to develop a soybean growing system. So we've moved through four different stages of development to get to the current system, which appears to be the most productive. So that's what our test farm is working. We're working on some other projects too, wheat on the side, but again, that's not our primary concern, as well as cultivation of other non-staple products and try to kink that out to make it more efficient. But again, that's not the primary focus of the research and development farm which we currently have, which is to develop the soybean growing system. Oh.
And so in the coming years with Bigman Agro, do you think you'll be able to what's the project? I'm not going to ask you for rough figures, but do you have a goal in terms of how you're trying to expand this beyond just one farm?
Correct. Yeah. So I do have goals for how we're trying to expand it. Again, that goes into some of our business strategy, which again, I can't disclose everything. But in general, the idea would several different options, which are, again, all dependent upon the final economics of the growing system that we eventually do go market to investors will work. But there's a few different options, such as it could all be controlled by pigment agriculture, which is it's going to be a slower growth process and have the technology be applied at a slower rate. There's the options for licensing, which is definitely something we're considering. In addition to an arrangement similar to franchising or raising funds for individual farms to operate essentially underneath the parent company of pigment agriculture. And those are the primary, there's the three primary business models which we are considering for how to expand this technology beyond, again, one research and development. And that will all come after, or, you know, once this technology is developed, we're going to build a larger research and development farm to make sure that the systems work at scale. And that's probably coming, that's going to be the next phase of business. And once that is complete, then we can go ahead and branch out into either of these three models or anything else that, you know, that comes up that might be better for us. But based off, you know, much deliberation of last year, those are essentially the three primary models that we've determined would be best for the business after the larger research and development.
And do you see yourself like operating on, do you see yourself planting other kinds of crops, including fruits, vegetables, and other whole grains? I mean, you mentioned staples, but other plants, with what you're trying to build, would you be willing to grow other kinds of crops, or is it just only focused on like the staples?
Yeah, no, we're definitely willing to, and you know, more than happy to grow other products. Probably not as the primary crop of each individual farm, maybe more so for the local people who are living near the farm or for grocery stores within the general vicinity, whether that's 100 miles or something. So we are looking to expand beyond staple crops, absolutely. But that's not going to be the primary concern for the first subset farms, which are focused on producing staple crops. Now, eventually, if we get to more larger scale urban farms, which are primarily focused on feeding citizens of the cities or and the general surrounding area, then that's when we would start to grow less heavily on staple crops and more so on a diverse range of products that the consumers of each individual farm would want to and are currently consuming at the time.
Right. And these, as the mission for Bigman Agriculture is that you're trying to make this type of farming more profitable. Like, do you think, is it because, let's say, if a farm focuses on what producing, let's say, one particular crop, let's say it could be a dairy farm or a wheat farm, are they just looking to incorporate Bigman Agriculture related product or a system where they can plant other crops if they're not able to plant actual crops during the season, right?
Sorry,
can you repeat your question? What I meant was like they are trying to build some. They can do like two kinds of farming, like horizontal farming with their staple crops that they're growing during a particular season. But then they might have an indoor farming where they can grow other crops that are not very sustainable. That cannot be farmed easily on regular farmland.
Yes. So, you know, someone can operate a horizontal farm currently with a vertical farm that utilizes either our technology or someone else's. But again, that touches on one interesting, you know, point of the concept, which is that if you're growing crops horizontally, unless you have a building constructed around it, which is located near the equator, you're going to have a limited growing season, which is generally for roughly about half of the year. And then the other half of the year, your farm is going to be dormant and, you know, not producing revenues in the same way that you produced it in the other half of the year, most of the time. If you're growing annual crops, maybe not if you're growing perennials, but I digress. But regardless, though, if you're growing crops in a vertical farm, you can grow them year-round. And that allows you to take advantage of multiple cycles. It's important.
Yeah, particularly because there's certain areas where you can't grow apples. In some areas, you can't grow potatoes. Other areas, you can't grow. You can grow wheat, but you can't grow rice. So it's just like, it's in a way, it's like you're taking, let's say, a farm in Minnesota and growing, basically building a vertical farm where you can grow rice, and then you can easily sell rice rather than having to, you know, go into a place like South Carolina to be able to bring rice, or let's say go abroad to bring rice into your farms, into your towns or cities.
Right. Yeah. So that is one main advantage, which is you can grow crops in environments they wouldn't naturally be able to grow. I like the example because it is a good example of growing crops in far south environments where it might be where it's going to be colder. And yeah, you can grow crops like rice, which generally can't grow in Minnesota in a vertical farm year round, versus having to import them from other countries, which can save on not only emissions, but it can save on costs too.
Yeah, I like what you were saying is like what you were inferring to was growing the vertical farm rice farms in Minnesota versus, let's say, importing rice from everywhere else.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, you're saying it the other way.
Oh, sorry.
But yeah, I think because I really think that vision is actually could be very interesting, especially if there are people who are willing to say to be able to have their own favorite crops that to grow in certain areas where they can't grow in general, right?
Yeah, correct. And I mean, in theory, with a globalized economy, you can get pretty much anything anywhere in the world. But again, how many miles did it travel to get there, and what quality is it when it finally gets there? What did it go through to get to your plate? So you can actually consume it. If it's within your state, it's very close to home, it feels local, it is local, and it is generally a better product for you, which is, you know, one great advantage why I like vertical farming in general. Not just with staple crops, but pretty much any product that, you know, people widely consume.
And do you think Bigman Agriculture, within the next couple of years, 5 to 10 years, let's say, if we're going to be continuing this project, would that be, let's say, 5 to 10 years from now, would Bigman Agriculture be able to get that, be able to achieve that kind of vision?
Potentially. Again, not on a scale where everyone's consuming Bigman Agriculture products, but it's not absurd to believe that, you know, in 10 years, we could possibly have farms located in, you know, northern parts of the country, or parts of Canada, that grow staple crops, and grow other, products that grow consumer goods, for the primary consumption of consumers. That's not too absurd of an idea. And I think is a relatively achievable goal. On a moderate scale, and I do think within the next 10 years that is definitely something that we can do.
Okay, so yeah, we're running out of time right now, Aaron, but I just want to thank you again for coming on the Next in Time podcast, and looking forward to see how your company will be making that major impact in the world of vertical farming.
I appreciate it. It was a pleasure. So much.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Next in Time podcast. We hope you enjoyed diving into the intriguing vision of our guest today. Don't forget to subscribe and follow us on social media to stay updated on future episodes. If you have any suggestions or feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay curious and keep exploring.